Holy and gracious God, a gift to come into this place once again, to be still with one another and sing your praises, feast at your table, hear your word, be moved by your spirit. This morning, God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be pleasing to you. O Lord, our God, our rock, and our redeemer. Amen. So today, as we continue retelling this story of God, as I said at the opening of worship, and we find ourselves out wandering in the wilderness as the Israelites are trying to figure out how to live with this newfound freedom after God had liberated them from their captivity in Egypt. And our story today is this moment when God passes along the Ten Commandments to the Israelites in the midst of their wilderness wanderings. And the Ten Commandments, I think, hold such an interesting place in our cultural zeitgeist and our national imagination. As I was preparing this week, I read that in some places in the South during the season of Lent, people will put the Ten Commandments on posters that they then put on stakes and plant in their front yards for everyone to see. And I can only guess that this is to make sure that everyone who drives by is reminded of them and feels immediately guilty and full of shame because of their sinful and broken ways. As someone wrote, perhaps it would be better if these posters were turned around so that people saw them as they left their homes and went out and engaged with their neighbors. But to be honest, I generally think we aren't really sure what to do with the Ten Commandments if we think about them at all. And I think our struggle is mostly that we hear them out of context. We only read something like Exodus 20, like we did this morning, and don't hear them in their rightful place in the larger story of God's people. And when we do this, when we take the Ten Commandments out of context, they so quickly devolve into rules or prescriptions of what we can and can't do. They become like prohibitive boundaries that restrict our freedom, restrict our ability to just want to live our lives. You can't do this, you can't do that. Do this, but don't do that. And honestly, I think that's mostly an exercise in just missing the point. It's one of the reasons that I love the narrative lectionary that we've been going through this fall. It's a chance to hear these stories and moments within the larger story of God and God's people and God's relationship with God's people. Because, as I said, when we disconnect this moment at Mount Sinai from the story of enslavement and liberation, it really is hard to make sense of them. As we've been hearing the last couple of weeks, the Exodus story is one of how God liberated God's people. God heard their cries in Egypt and sent Moses and Aaron to free them from Pharaoh's grip, to free them from their enslavement and empire. And then, as we heard last week, in that final, very dramatic moment, the people pass through the waters of the Red Sea and are finally free. From there, they begin their journey out in the wilderness, where they experience God's mercy along the way through the provision of food and safety. And yet still wondering if this freedom is really all that much better than slavery in Egypt. And finally, they reach the base of Mount Sinai, where we hear about their story today. And God says to them, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. In this moment, before passing along the Ten Commandments, the first thing God does is remind the people how God freed them from their captivity. In doing this, God roots the Ten Commandments in this liberating act. And I think in this way, these Ten Commandments are all about helping the people to figure out how to live well with their newfound freedom. These Ten Commandments solidify in the life of the people, in their social, institutional, and communal life, that process of freedom that began back in Egypt. Here at Mount Sinai, perhaps we could say that God provides the structures of freedom. God provides a way for the freedom God gave to the people to be sustained in their life together, in their relationships with one another, It's been said that in this way, the Ten Commandments are so much less prescriptive than they are descriptive. And by that, I mean the Ten Commandments don't as much prescribe a bunch of do's and don'ts as much as they describe a way of living faithfully that offers healthy and whole life for everyone. And in doing so, I'm convinced the Ten Commandments in this moment helped the people as they struggled with how to live with this newfound freedom. It helped them to see even more clearly what was so very broken about life in Egypt: Sabbath rest. It helped them to see all of the distortions and the dysfunctions where the structures and relationships meant for human flourishing were manipulated and contorted to the benefit of some at the expense of others. With this as the background, God at Mount Sinai says to the people, here are the structures of freedom. Theologian Sam Wells tells the story out of Romania in 1989. I'm jumping back just a little bit. When the country was in the midst of political turmoil and violence, the communist dictator at the time had just been defeated and was executed in a bloody revolution. And the people were free, but now no one was in charge. There were months of protest and violence in the streets as the struggle for leadership played out neighborhood by neighborhood. With all of this swirling around, a Romanian citizen in one sentence summed up not just the struggle in Romania, but as Wells puts it, the human condition generally. She said to the Western journalist who was interviewing her in this moment, she said, "We have freedom, but we don't know what to do with it." What a powerful description of the ongoing struggle in human communities, so many human communities. We have freedom, but we don't know quite what to do with it. In the wilderness, the Israelites had freedom, but they weren't sure what to do with it. And of course, the temptation is simply to reenact what they had experienced back in Egypt with all of its distortions and dysfunctions. Into this, in so many ways, the Ten Commandments are a gift. A gift to those who have been set free. Because you see, at Mount Sinai, God gives the people, God gives us the meaning, the means for living and keeping our freedom. The structures and markers for not devolving into those distortions of empire that occur when God is displaced from the center of life. It's been said that Jesus sums up the Ten Commandments when he responds to the rich young ruler who asks what the greatest commandment is. It's been said that Jesus sums up the Ten Commandments when he responds by saying, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. And there is a second one like it: love your neighbor as yourself." You see, a lot of people will break the Ten Commandments into these two categories. The first four have to do with our relationship with God, how we love the Lord our God with all our heart, with all our soul, with all our mind. Have no other gods before me. Do not make for yourself an idol. Don't take the Lord's name in vain. Remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. Each of these commandments have to do in some one way or another with our relationship with God, how we love God, the extent to which we center a life and relationship with God. The rest of the commandments, the final six, have to do with our relationships with one another. How we love our neighbor as ourselves. Honor your father and your mother. Do not kill. Do not commit adultery. Do not steal. Do not bear false witness against your neighbor. Do not covet your neighbor's things. Love your neighbor as yourself. These are the structures of freedom. A gift to people trying to figure out how to live with a newfound freedom. And this is the summons to live in freedom faithfully, loving God and loving neighbor as an alternative to all of those distortions. And that's still the summons for us today. For the church to live faithfully. I'm sorry, I gotta get. For the church to live faithfully as an alternative to all of these distortions, and unfortunately, I really don't think it takes a lot of imagination to see some of those distortions of empire operating today. In their own ways, in our American context, it feels like the examples are legion. And we could go through the process of listing them off. I probably shouldn't be, but I've been taken aback at how in our national politics it seems we have gotten to the point where the pursuit of power, at the expense of stated moral commitments, no longer need to be covert or something we want to keep hidden. And of course, there is always some nuance to a claim like that, but it seems so very brazen the way claimed ethical commitments are so easily set aside if it means the accumulation of more power. The ends justify the means, it seems to be. I think another example is how we live with this distorted notion that freedom is freedom from almost anything that hinders my ability to live life how I want to live it. It's a freedom for pursuing my self-interest. In his book, Myths America Lives By, Richard Hughes writes this, "Freedom to pursue self-interest stands diametrically opposed to the Christian understanding of freedom. For the Christian understanding of freedom ultimately means freedom from self-interest in order to serve the neighbor." We have freedom, but we don't know what to do with it. To a people struggling with how to live with freedom, then and now, God proclaims down from Mount Sinai, "Here, this is how. Worship God. Resist the distortions and be a people trying to live in right relationship with one another. Love God and love neighbor. These are the structures of freedom." And I'm so very grateful that, like those Israelites so long ago wandering out in the wilderness, God has gifted us with one another. The church, to learn from, to talk to discern with, to wrestle, to challenge, and to love, as we try to figure out how to resist all of the distortions and live faithfully with our freedom. My prayer is that we learn to trust that the God we worship is indeed the God who forgives and frees us. Frees us to love God and love neighbor, not for those distortions of our own glory or our own good, but for God's glory and neighbor's good. This then is how we shall live. These are the structures of freedom. Thanks be to God.